Devon Dotson's got it for KU at the top. A high screen by DeSosa. Devon will step back on a three and bury one from 24 feet. What a triple for Devon Dotson. And Iowa State will back off. Tehan will dribble it up. And you can rock, chalk it up, the Jayhawks win. An emphatic blowout here tonight in Ames, 79-53.
Wasn't even a game last night. That is very rare when somebody goes into Ames to take on the Cyclones. KU rolls the Cyclones last night, 79-53. Devon Dotson, a big night. KU making three-pointers, and if they make three-pointers like they did last night, they're going to be very difficult to beat. Bill Self, the head coach of the Jayhawks, pretty happy with the win.
I thought our guys did great. After about that 10-minute mark of the first half, I thought we guarded them, did a good job of locking them up. And if you look at it, Dot had a great floor game. Ochai made shots, played very well. We did a lot of without Marcus because of his ankle, and we got to get him healthy. But I thought he did a good job when he came back in. And David was great. He was UMKC good. And then Doak, how about Doak passing out the traps today? I mean, he threw David two lobs. Lobs. Unbelievable. I mean, it was, the guys did well. And, of course, we kind of screwed the game up several possessions and didn't take care of the basketball. But, you know, 12 turnovers on the road, we'll live with that.
Yeah, absolutely. KU's had problems with turnovers, but 12, that's pretty good. The win last night was the largest by Kansas and Ames in the Bill Self era and the largest by any KU team inside Hilton Coliseum since a 29-point victory way back in 2003. And we talked about this yesterday on the show about how KU fans like, oh, God, we always have problems in Ames. Bill Self is 12-5 at Iowa State. Now, that's a really good record. Not as good as his percentage at home, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think most people would take a 12-5 record on the road against a rival in the Big 12.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Say, hey, you're going to play 17 times in Ames, and we're going to give you 12 victories. I think you just, like, where do I sign up? I'll take it. That means you're winning 70% of those road games in Ames.
Yeah.
7 out of every 10. That's the percentage, roughly.
And I would guess that there's not a lot of other coaches in the Big 12 that have a very good win percentage at Ames.
I would imagine you're probably right. And then KU played last night more than 9 minutes in the first out without junior guard Marcus Garrett. He injured his other ankle, rolled it. It looked serious, but then he came back later and looked just fine. Iowa State now 7-7 overall, 0-2 in Big 12 play. And the Jayhawks are now 12-2, 2-0 in the Big 12. And I tell you, last night what stood out to me about Kansas, well, first of all, Iowa State just chucked a lot of threes. I didn't think they tried to do anything offensively, but KU shot 52% from the floor. Udoka Azubuike was 4 of 5 from the foul line. Pinch me. Did that really happen? 4 out of 5. Look good at the line. Maybe he's figuring something out. Dotson, we talked about. He had a big game for Kansas with 20. Abaji hit 4 threes. He had 16. McCormick had 16. And Kansas from the three-point line, they were 10 of 19. And free throw shooting has been a problem for them. Last night, 13 of 17, which means they probably won't make anything against Baylor on Saturday.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not. It's at Allen Fieldhouse. Yeah. Big game coming up Saturday, and we'll preview it with Brian Haney, the voice of Jayhawks. He'll be with us tomorrow at 9:30, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. Instead of today, he's on a plane right now, so he couldn't talk to us today. So we'll talk to him tomorrow, which will probably be perfect timing because we'll be 24 hours or about 24 hours away from that showdown. Number 3 Kansas hosting number 4 Baylor. Both teams 2-0 in the Big 12. It should be a great game. Baylor is 0-17 at Allen Fieldhouse. They have never won at Allen Fieldhouse. Yeah. There's always a first time for everything. We shall see if it happens on Saturday, as both KU and Baylor have looked really good this year, especially recently. Baylor had a nice win at Texas Tech, a tough place to win now that Chris Beard is there. It should be a good one. Pre-game 11:30 and tip time at noon coming up on Saturday on Z96.3 Lake, your home for the Jayhawks in north central Kansas. There's another big college basketball game that's taking place tonight. If you haven't been following it, the Wichita State Shockers are pretty good. They're 13-1, and a one loss to West Virginia in the Cancun Classic. They are 1-0 in conference play in American Athletic. They're ranked 23rd in the country. It's a top 25 showdown tonight as Memphis comes to town. They're ranked 21st. It's at 6 o'clock. You can watch it on ESPN2, which I'll try to watch some of that. It should be a really good basketball game. Chance for the Shockers to maybe be the team to beat in this conference. Before the season, everybody said Memphis. Well, then James Weissman was suspended by the NCAA. Then he said, you know what, the heck with this, which you don't blame him. And he takes his talents to the NBA. But Memphis is still very good, picked by some to be a Final Four team until Wiseman left to go to the NBA after playing just three games. So maybe Wichita State's the favorite. Maybe these are the two best teams in the AAC. We'll find out more tonight. Greg Marshall excited about the matchup against Memphis.
Just in the scheme of the league, it's going to be a big game, and it's very early. So it kind of sets the tone for who's looking up at whom. You're going to be seeing some pros. Memphis, great tradition, proud program, famous coach, and he's probably got some players that may be famous real soon, too, as far as, you know, playing at the highest level. And our guys, you know, we've got some pros as well. So it's just a fun matchup. It's big boy basketball in early January and a meaningful game, and I think it's going to be really, really entertaining.
Now, this is what Wichita State envisioned when they joined the American Athletic Conference, because you don't get this type of matchup in the Missouri Valley. And this is what you're going to get. And there are some negatives being in the conference, travel and for the other sports. And Wichita State wasn't very good last year. But now that they're back at 13-1, this is what you envision when you join the American Athletic Conference. You're going to play the likes of the Cincinnati and Memphis teams that are good. Was Connecticut. Now they're going to go back to the Big East. But it's still better than playing, you know, Indiana State and Illinois State. No disrespect to those programs, but it just is. And you're on ESPN2. You're not on CBS Sports Network tonight, or maybe not even on TV at all. So it is a better deal for Wichita State, at least for their basketball program. And it's a big game tonight for the Shockers. All right, local sports information, Dusty. What do we have?
Not a lot going on today as far as actual activities, but we do want to remind everybody we have our high school basketball locker room chats coming up here this evening. We'll talk with the head coaches of St. John's Tipton, Lakeside Rock Hills, and Sylvan Lucas beginning around 5:15 this evening. And we'll remind everybody, if you ever miss any of our locker room chats, you can always find those at kcountry94.com on our locker room chat podcast. If you missed any of the first couple days of locker room chats, wrestling we had on Tuesday, and last night we talked with the coaches of Beloit, Osborne Smith Center, and Thunder Ridge. So, again, it's all right there at your fingertips at kittycountry94.com. We have high school basketball coming up tomorrow night as well, as we have Russell at Beloit on Kitty Country 94 and online video at the Beloit Trojan Channel at ncksports.com. Pregame coverage beginning at 5:50, and then on Z96 through the lake tomorrow night, pregame coverage at 5:50, St. John's Tipton at Hill City. And you can listen to the games online at kittycountry94.com as well. So let's look at what's going on right now in the local sports world.
I made a mistake of telling somebody when my birthday was, and that person then talked to me the other day, and they said they heard that I was doing games on my birthday tomorrow night. They said, "Aren't you the boss? Can't you give yourself the day off on your birthday?" And I said, "That's how dumb I am. That's the doofus I am. I can't even get the boss, which is myself, to let myself have the night off for my 44th. Woohoo! Double four. Super excited about that. 44th birthday coming up tomorrow night. So I'll be calling basketball. I'll be hanging out with the Russell Broncos and the Beloit Trojans, the final trip for Russell ever for the rest of eternity, unless they rejoin the league in Beloit on my birthday. That's how I want to celebrate my birthday, seeing the last ever matchup between Russell and Beloit in Beloit. Now, Russell and Beloit will play later this year in Russell. So there is that. Somebody said, "Well, what about how old are you going to be?" 44. Oh, yeah. Well, exactly. It's just another year. 40 is monumental. 40 is monumental. You're halfway to dead. So that's monumental. I'm kidding, but the life expectancy, that says actually about right. But 44, I'm like, man, didn't I just have my 40th? Now 44. You know, 44 is okay because I still am a big believer in math, not geometry. Math. Yeah. Where you're 44, I round it down to 40. Yeah. I'm okay.
Yeah.
But next year might be a little more difficult because now I'm the high side of 40 at 45. Maybe 45 is okay. 46, boom. Now I'm thinking 50's right on the horizon.
Time,
and that's not good either. So, I'm so brilliant that I'm making myself work on a Friday night on my birthday. What's up with that?
I can always remember when your birthday is, because today's my dad's birthday. So it's always the day after my dad's. That's how I remember. When you first ever told me that it was your birthday on January 10th, I was like, well, that's the day after my dad's.
Right.
Dad's 72 today. I don't know if he's still listens to the show or not, but happy birthday, Dad.
Happy birthday, Dad.
But he's 72 today, and then yours is always the day after his. That's how I remember that.
I
would not remember it if it wasn't for that.
Yeah, well, and I wouldn't remember my wife's birthday either, except that Our youngest was born the very day before her birthday.
Yeah.
And it's easy. 11, 12, 13 is when he was born, which is, we kind of were able to schedule that C-section, so that worked out pretty good. Yeah, some birthdays are easier to remember than others. Anniversaries sometimes are easier to remember than others. And, yeah, it kind of sneaks up on you because the other day I hadn't even realized, you know, what day it was. I'm like, oh, yeah, my birthday's on the way. And then somebody said, what are you doing to celebrate your birthday? And I'm like, I'm calling basketball games.
Yeah, I guess
I'm Don't you take too. A night off? I'm like, yes, I do. But, you know, just the way it falls. My birthday's on a Friday this
year. One of those deals for me where, like, I'm never calling a game on my birthday, but I'm working usually August 21st. It's not like a...
Well, you know,
it's
I mean,
like, I don't, it's
okay.
It's not like I have... like this tough job that I'm that I don't want to be at, that I don't want to work. If I was doing a game on my birthday, I wouldn't care.
Like, well, you know, I don't think we're the first two people in America to work on our birthday.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I don't think you really automatically get the day off because it's your birthday, but usually you'll have your evenings off in most cases to where you can go out to eat or go to a movie or something. Nope, I'm going to hang out with a whole bunch of Beloit Trojan Russell Bronco people, which is okay. I'm not upset about it, by the way. I hope nobody's listening going, well, Gerstner don't want to hang out with us. I'm like, well, some of you I do. Some of you I don't know.
There's some that I clearly do not want to hang out with.
Anybody that screams at me, I probably don't want to hang out with, you know. But no, it should be fun. Looking forward to it as long as the weather cooperates. If the weather messes it all up, then I have the night off and I don't have to work on my birthday.
Yeah.
It's possible, I guess. But looks like now we're talking about an inch of snow, and I don't think that's enough to mess anything up tomorrow. But who knows in this day and age? Because Russell does have a bit of a trip to Beloit, St. John's.
Yeah, he has a bit of a trip
to Hill City.
More of what's going to happen in Hill City probably than here. So we'll keep an eye on that, too.
And those are the games we have tomorrow on the radio. So we'll preview those tomorrow on the Sports Ticket. Okay, so before I get to the Chiefs, and we're going to talk about the Chiefs and why this postseason will be different for the Chiefs and why it'll be the same. We're going to play both sides of the coin. Are you with me? We're going to do that here in just a little bit. Matt Rhule is the new head coach of the Carolina Panthers, and I came across this on Twitter, and I thought it was some very powerful stuff. If you are a person that really likes football or enjoys football or loves football, or you're a person that doesn't understand why people like football, listen to this. This is Matt Rhule at his press conference. Almost seemed like a commencement speech. It did. Like he was a speaker at a college graduation. But it's good stuff. Matt Rhule, new head coach, Carolina, leaving Baylor.
Why the call? Why the draw? Why do you want to take on this next chapter of your life? Well, Coach, you had a great thing at Baylor. Why did you want to go to the NFL? And it's really simple to me. I start every decision in my life with why. And I'll tell you this. Now, I love the game of football. I was a kid that grew up in New York City and basketball all around me. And since from an early age, I loved the game of football. My mom would, when my dad was working, my mom would take me out. And I would say now, as I ran a fly route, she'd throw the ball as far as she could. And I'd go over and try to catch it. And my dad, twice a year, would drive me to Pennsylvania, to Penn State, and watch games. I love the game of football. And football's done so much for me in my life. I was able to go to Penn State and was not a great player, but I was able to in some small part contribute to that team. I was able then to go on and get my master's degree because of football. I was able to get into coaching, and football's brought me in all these places and to meet all these people, and it's brought me here today. It's a special game. It's the greatest game that there is. You walk into a locker room, there's guys of all ages. There's guys from all different parts of the country. There's guys of all shapes and sizes. Yet they come together to form a team and play the hardest game that there is to play. They play in bad weather. They play when they're injured. They play when they don't feel great. They find a way to get it done as a team. It's the greatest game that there is. And as I sat here and was trying to make a decision about my life, I said to myself, Matt, what do you want? And I want to go and be a part of the greatest game at the highest stage. And I just had to figure out where.
That's good stuff. I mean, you know, and that makes sense because, you know, I think the first question many people had was, well, why now? Well, first of all, 70 million reasons why you could go to Carolina. That's right. 7-year contract, $60 million, $10 million more in incentives. That's a good reason to go. But the timing is good. He resurrected Baylor, put him right in the Big 12 title game, got him to a Sugar Bowl. Can you take Baylor any further than that? Maybe, but you're pretty close to the ceiling probably. And now you have opportunity to go to Carolina. And other NFL teams are interested. This is when your value is as high as it's ever been in your life. He's only 44 years of age, and he's from New York, but he's coached the NFL before as an assistant. He knows the NFL. It's not like it's something new to him. And And he said, listen, football, as you just heard, but if you missed it, football is the greatest sport in the world, in his opinion. He grew up with it. He loves it. So why not coach at the highest level of that sport if you're given the opportunity? Yeah. And on top of that, they'll pay you $60 to $70 million. That doesn't hurt either, I wouldn't think. But I thought that was good stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and everybody wants that challenge. And like you said, this is the perfect time to do it. And, yeah, you don't fault the guy for doing anything like that ever. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think it's going to be interesting to see what he does when he does get into the NFL.
I think Carolina's a good situation because, one, you got Christian McCaffrey you can build around. You got to figure out your quarterback situation. If Cam Newton's healthy, then you're in pretty good shape. But I think they're going to walk away from him, perhaps. Yeah. We shall see. And draft a young quarterback in the draft. But they also are in a division, when you look at it, Atlanta, Matt Ryan isn't getting any younger.
No.
Atlanta struggled last couple of years. Tampa Bay has a mess on their hands. Are they going to keep Jameis Winston or start over with a different quarterback? They're not a major threat. The threat in your division is New Orleans, and Drew Brees isn't going to play forever. Yeah. So I think Carolina's in a good position, and maybe that's part of the reason why they gave him the long-term contract was, hey, we believe this guy's going to be the guy. We're going to get him a quarterback, which I would guess that's going to happen this year or next year in the draft. And we've got some guys and some talent to build around. I mean, Carolina started the year 5-3. So I think it's a really good situation for Matt Rhule. I wouldn't be surprised that he does very, very well there, to be quite honest with you. Okay, so the Chiefs, it is postseason time for the Chiefs. They will host the Texans, and that's at 2:05 kickoff this Sunday on Z96.3 Lake with pregame at 1 o'clock. So we're going to start with question number one. Because I think a lot of Chiefs fans probably are asking themselves these questions. Why is this postseason going to be different for the Chiefs? I'll let Dusty answer first. Why is this year going to be different than other postseasons? For instance, let me run through. I'll give you some time to think about that. You think about the Chiefs' playoff history, and it is pretty negative. Go back to 1971, well before Dusty and I were on this earth. 1971, the double overtime loss to Miami in the playoffs. Jan Stenerud, who is one of the best kickers in NFL history and in the NFL Hall of Fame, missed a 31-yard field goal that would have won the game in regulation against the Dolphins. Instead, they missed a field goal wide right. They lost 27-24. So you had to go all the way basically to 93, which we'll get to in a moment. 1990... the Chiefs lost on a 52-yard field goal against the Dolphins. Nick Lowry, I remember watching this, his field goal, it hit the crossbar. There was a penalty before that to back them up. Hit the crossbar, no good. Another few inches, bounces probably across, and the Chiefs win the game. Instead, they lose 17-16. 1993 was great, and Chiefs fans started to think, all right, everything's great. The Chiefs rallied and beat the Steelers. Tim Barnett catching the touchdown in the back of the end zone to beat the Steelers, Joe Montana doing his magic. Then you go down to Houston, and remember Keith Cash, the tight end, punching the mural of Buddy Ryan after scoring the touchdown as they beat the team that was favored to win the AFC that year, the Houston Oilers at the time in Houston.
They beat them like 30-0 during the regular season. The Oilers beat the Chiefs or something like this. Yeah. I don't know if that was the exact score, but they dominated.
They did, and then the Chiefs beat them in Houston.
Yeah.
Then the Chiefs go to Buffalo, and everybody's feeling like, all right, going to take out the Bills. And then Montana, and this is when I think everything started changing.
Yeah.
Montana got a concussion in the first quarter or first half. He didn't play the rest. Dave Craig did. The Chiefs got rolled by the Bills. And then in 95, and these are the ones I really vividly remember because I was in college at the time and I knew what was coming, kind of like last year. 1995, Lynn Elliott was a problem all year long for the Chiefs. He had missed a couple extra points against the Raiders, and this one, the extra points were, you know, 18, 19, 20 yards, not 33 in today's game of football. And he missed not one, not two, but three field goals against the Colts. And the Chiefs lost that one in 1995, and they were the number one seed, if I remember correctly, 13-3. 1997, they were the number one seed, and they lost to the Broncos 14-10. And what happened there? Well, they played the wrong quarterback. That's just what the Chiefs do. Gerback was hurt. Gannon played great. The Chiefs got a Pete Stojanovic 50-some-yard field goal at Arrowhead to beat the Broncos in the regular season to get them the number one seed. And then the Chiefs, they play Denver in January of 98, and they lose. There was a controversial non-call in the end zone. Tony Gonzalez was pass interfered with, whatever. Bottom line is the Chiefs played the wrong quarterback, put Gannon in late in that contest, but it was too late. So that was 97. So 95, 97, the Chiefs had unbelievable defenses, and the offenses weren't so great. You know, Steve Bono, by the way, was a quarterback in 95. 97. You know, that tells you how good Marty Schottenheimer was.
Yeah.
13-3 with Steve Bono at quarterback. Like Christian Okoye and Barry Word and all this. But the defense was outstanding, and the Chiefs wasted the defenses those years in the playoffs. So that was 97. 03, lost to the Colts. If you remember the 03 season, the Chiefs were 9-0 under Dick Vermeil, but their defense was horrendous. The offense was great with Trent Green, Eddie Kinnison, Priest Holmes, Willie Rofe, Will Shields. And that was the game where the Chiefs could not force the Colts to punt. Not once. Chiefs lost 38-31. That was a no-punt game. 2006, that was Herm Edwards. Chiefs backed into the playoffs, yeah, didn't deserve to be there. And I remember watching that game. It was like Herm Edwards was making sure they didn't lose by 30. Just handed off to Larry Johnson every time. Damon Heward was the quarterback because Trent Green was hurt. And the Chiefs lost to the Colts 23-8. No freaky bad thing to happen there.
No.
2010, the Chiefs were in a weak division, went 10-6 with Matt Cassel at quarterback. You knew they had no chance against Baltimore, even though they're at home, and they lost that 30-7. Now we get to the really bad stuff, which some of that's already bad. 2013.
Yeah. The 90s are really bad.
They're bad. The 95 and 97 are tough ones because the Chiefs were the favorite to win the AFC. 2013, the Chiefs go to Indianapolis. They're up 38-10. Jamaal Charles gets hurt early in that game. Alex Smith plays great. The defense has injuries and can't stop the Andrew Luck. He recovers his own fumble for a touchdown. Freaky things happen to the Chiefs in the playoffs, people. Freaky things. I said a few years ago, they're jinxed, and somebody yelled at me for saying jinxed. I'm like, if you knew the history, you might believe it.
Yeah.
So 2013, up 38-10, somehow couldn't win that game. Lost 45-44, one of the biggest collapses in playoff history. 2015, thankfully, the Chiefs got to play Brian Hoyer. They shut out the Texans 30-0, then lost to New England 27-20. Nothing really fluky about that one. 2016, the Chiefs are in the playoffs, and they hold the Steelers to no touchdowns. The Steelers score zero touchdowns at Arrowhead. Well, clearly the Chiefs win, right?
Nope.
Chiefs do not win. Six field goals is what the defense gave up. Gave up a lot of yards, but they bent. Didn't really break. Gave up six field goals. Alex Smith and Chiefs offense did nothing towards the very end. Then they thought they had won the game, if you remember that. They had a touchdown negated by a penalty.
Yeah.
They end up settling for a field goal, I think, there because they had to go for – I can't remember
that. They got the touchdown. I think it wasn't at the two-point
two-point conversion.
Because they were
it was, you're right. You're right. Yeah. You're right. They got the touchdown. Then the two-point conversion was called back due to a penalty.
Yeah.
So another freaky thing. 2017, up 21-0 at home. Travis Kelce gets a concussion in the first half. Derek Johnson with a tremendous, one of the best hits I've seen on a quarterback ever. And the ball comes free. The Chiefs recover it. Clearly, it's Chiefs ball. Jeff Triplett, who retired after that year, I wonder why, called forward progress on Marcus Mariota, who never had moved forward.
No.
And somehow called the play dead, no fumble. And so the Titans down 21-0. At that point, I think it was 14-0. That was a big call, went against them. Then later in the game, of course, Mariota catches a batted ball back to himself for a touchdown. And the Chiefs don't score a point in the second half. Derrick Henry runs all over the Chiefs, and the Chiefs lose 22-21. Alex Smith couldn't get him into a field goal range once in the second half. But Kelce was out with the injury. 2018, last year, of course, they beat the Colts, and then there's the game against New England, which still really sits in my crawl, and that's because I knew what was coming. And that was the defense couldn't stop anybody, and they didn't. In the second half, they were horrendous, and they couldn't get off the field. But what's the play everybody remembers? That is a play that could have easily gone the other way, because think about it. What have I done right here? In 71, Jan Stenerud hits that field goal. The Chiefs win the game. Who knows what happens, right?
Yeah.
1990, Nick Lowry's field goal is a couple inches longer and gets over the crossbar instead of hitting it and coming back into play. No good. If it's good, in 90, maybe they do something special. What if Montana didn't get hurt in the 1993 AFC title game in Buffalo? What if the Chiefs changed kickers instead of sticking with Len Elliott? Maybe they don't miss three field goals in 1995 against Jim Harbaugh and the Colts. What if Marty Schottenheimer picked the right quarterback, who, by the way, I've talked to James Hasty and Neil Smith about this when I was in Kansas City. There was a get-together, and I asked him about that playoff game, and I said, who did you want to start at quarterback, Rich Gannon or Elvis Gerback? And they both immediately go, Gannon. The whole locker room wanted Gannon.
Yeah.
And Marty said, well, you don't lose your job due to injury.
Yeah.
So there you chose the wrong quarterback. 2013.
Pretty clear you chose the wrong quarterback when he went to Oakland.
Exactly. 2003, you can't even get him to punt one time, Peyton Manning, on your home field. If you just get one punt, who knows what happens in 2003. And that was a good Chiefs team that year, offensively. 2013, the Chiefs are rolling 38-10. What happens if they don't blow that lead in 2013? 2016, what if there isn't the penalty on Eric Fisher for the two-point that would have tied the game? Did the Chiefs go on and win that game and do special things? Don't know. And, of course, 2017, what if Kelsey doesn't get hurt? What if Marcus Mariota doesn't catch
in that game?
Oh, I know. What if Marcus Mariota doesn't catch that batted ball back to him for a touchdown? What if Travis Kelce doesn't get hurt? What if Jeff Triplett actually knew what he was doing and didn't call forward progress on a sack and a fumble? And then last year, of course, the easy one is, what if Dee Ford didn't line up offsides? What if? I think the Chiefs and Rams would have played the highest scoring Super Bowl in history.
Yeah.
That's what I think. I don't know if the Chiefs would have won because of that defense, but Todd Gurley was banged up a little bit. I like the Chiefs' chances of winning that rematch, but then would we still have Bob Sutton as defensive coordinator? I don't know. Possibly. Maybe not. I've gone through a lot of what-ifs, but only something here and there had to change for the Chiefs to win any of those games.
Oh, yeah.
And I went through all of those. A lot of fluky, weird things happened. I've just mentioned a Hall of Fame kicker missing a 31-yard field goal. Another Hall of Fame kicker missing a 52-yard hit the crossbar. Your quarterback gets a concussion. Kelsey gets a concussion a few years back. You've got the horrible officiating call by Triplett. You got the deflected pass caught by Mariota for a touchdown. Andrew Luck recovering his own fumble and going into the end zone, coming back from a 38-10 deficit. Just little freaky things. Your coach choosing the wrong quarterback. And then last year, Dee Ford lining up offsides. And a penalty, which was questionable, on Eric Fisher on a two-point try, tied the game against Pittsburgh. So after I gave you that history, why is this year different? Why won't something freaky, fluky, and bad happen to the Chiefs this year, whether it be Sunday against the Texans or at Baltimore next Sunday or hosting the Titans next Sunday or in the Super Bowl, something fluky happens, Mahomes gets hurt or something, Kelce gets another concussion, Hill pulls his hammy, horrible officiating call, a crazy double doink off the upright that doesn't go in or does go in for the other team. Why is this year, help me, Dusty, why is this year going to be the year? Why is this year different? And I don't have to keep thinking about those horrible things I just went through. And Chiefs Kingdom, people listening to me that have lived through all that, say thanks for reliving it for me, even though you know it was still in the back of your head.
The problem with what you presented there is none of that stuff is ever predictable. Like,
I know.
You just don't know.
Well, I think the Len Elliott thing was predictable.
The Len Elliott thing was predictable.
I think the Chiefs' defense last year was predictable.
I'm thinking more of, like, you know what I'm saying?
I even think 97 with Gerback was.
Yeah, those fluky things that I'm talking about, not the mistakes by coaching or the organization, the general manager, by keeping a kicker.
Right.
But the Mariota, you know, I catch my own touchdown pass, Andrew Luck recovering the fumble, or concussions for players.
Yeah.
You know, they had two running backs that went out in that 38-10 game, too, the Chiefs did.
And Jamal Charles.
Yeah, and then Niall Davis got hurt right after that as backup, so not right
after. But they
after
still went on to score 44 points without him.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I can't remember what point of the game it was that Niall Davis went out, but you know, those are the things you can't predict.
Right.
So if you're asking why it's going to be different this year from that aspect, it just has to be karma, right?
Right.
Like it has to be, like it's going
to
come back to us.
We're due.
Yeah.
Way.
Yeah. It's like that has to be karma on that side. Now, if you're asking why it's going to be different, that you're not going to end up in those situations, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I feel this is probably going into the playoffs.
The most complete team they've had in the playoffs.
That's where I'm going. The most balanced team, offense, defense, everything that you can do to win in the playoffs and in the postseason. Yeah. Again, we haven't seen everything we need to see against this defense over this winning streak that they're on.
Right.
As far as can they defend the run and things like that. Mm-hmm. But for me, I really do feel no matter what happens when the playoffs start, that this is probably the most balanced and efficient team on both sides of the ball going into the playoffs that I can remember the Chiefs having.
Here's why I think this postseason is different for the Chiefs. I think because of what you just said. This is the most complete they've been going into the playoffs. I'm not worried about the collection of the 16 games they played.
Yeah.
I'm just looking right now. They're playing their best defense of the year. Their offense, I think, is going to dial it up a notch, I would hope. I think Andy Reid's going to have something up his sleeve. And Andy Reid's only lost one playoff game when he's had 2 weeks to prepare, and that was the Steeler game when they only allowed six field goals. So he usually does well with a bye. I think Damien Williams being healthy is a big thing for this team, too, because he's their best running back. And I think the Texans, I also think this year's a little bit different because I think the matchups really actually bode well for the Chiefs from the standpoint of, and I know people may say that's crazy because the Ravens and Titans can run the ball, but Houston is a very fickle team, up and down. And the fact the Chiefs lost to them already this year, I think creates a little bit even more motivation, believe it or not. And I just like the matchup, actually. I look at the offensive line of the Texans. That's not a very good offensive line. The Chiefs have been bringing a lot of pressure there in a six-game winning streak. I think they're going to make some plays to where Watson's going to throw make a mistake or two or force a fumble or just simply, you know, as long as they – the key is going to be to slow down Carlos Hyde to where Houston can't really establish the running game.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then Baltimore, you've beaten the Baltimore Ravens the last two times. Everybody acts so scared of the Ravens that – you've beaten them the last two times. Now, they have the recipe to beat you, and this time would be in Baltimore. And I know that's tough, but the Chiefs, they went 7-1 on the road this year. Yeah. So they can win on the road. And when you have number 15, and that's the other reason why this year's different, you have number 15 with a year of experience under his belt, and it wasn't his fault they didn't win against New England last year. And I think he's healthier now than he has been most of the year since week one.
Yeah.
I think that's the other reason. That if you got to make plays late in the game, as long as your defense can be good enough, you can win. And you know, I look at the Chiefs, and if this defense is better and the offense, you know, is solid, I think teams are going to have to score. I think teams are going to have to score at least 27 to beat the Chiefs.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Baltimore can score 27 or more. I don't know if Tennessee can score 27 or more, although they did 32 in Tennessee earlier this year when the defense was horrible. I don't know if Houston can score 27 or more. I think the Chiefs, as long as they don't have a whole bunch of turnovers and the defense plays like it has been, the Chiefs are going to get enough possessions to where even if they have to settle for some field goals in the red zone, which I don't want to see, which has been a problem this year, that if the Chiefs score 27 or more, they're going to win. I just don't, you know, if I said that last year, you've been like, you're insane. The Chiefs have to score 45 to win.
Yeah.
But this year does seem different. So that's part of the reason why I think this postseason is different. The defense looked improved. I'll give you another reason why this year's different. They've got a legitimate defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
They've got a guy that has won a Super Bowl, beating the maybe the best offense of all time in Tom Brady with Randy Moss and an 18-0 Patriot team. And what happened in that game? Got all kinds of pressure, and Brady was on his butt a lot. And that's why the Patriots struggled. Great quarterbacks don't like pressure. No quarterback likes pressure. And when you put pressure on a quarterback, they tend to make mistakes. The wild card here, though, is Deshaun Watson is not Tom Brady sitting back there, doesn't move around a lot.
Yeah.
That's the scary thing. You get the pressure, and you're there to make the play, but you don't wrap up, or Watson does what he did against the Bills and bounces off a couple guys. That's when big plays happen. But I think that those are the reasons why the postseason is different this year for the Chiefs. One, I think they're the most complete they've been of all those years. Like we talked about, you know, 93, they weren't great offensively.
No.
1990, they weren't great offensively. 1995, their offense was average. Their defense was awesome. 97, same thing. Their defense was great. The offense was questionable. 2003, when they started 9-0, the defense was horrendous, and the offense was fantastic. And then we know, of course, about the last few years where the offense has been, even when Alex Smith was pretty good, and the defense was the problem. This year, the offense is still a top-five offense statistically. The defense has been a top-three defense the last 6 weeks, winning six in a row, although I do wonder, based on who the teams they've played. So, why is this postseason different? Dusty and I agree. You have number 15, another year under his belt, probably as healthy as he's been since week one. The defense is better, and maybe the matchups and the road to the Super Bowl might be just as good as it's ever been for the Chiefs. There's not a great, unbelievable offensive team that's going to spread you out and throw the ball over the place. There's nobody left in the AFC. That's the Chiefs. Why will this postseason be the same old Chiefs? Let's ask this flip side of the coin question. Why will this postseason be the same old Chiefs? Kyle Beisner is a Bronco fan. Let me preface this. And we were at practice the other day, and we were needing to talk. We're trying to get the kids to talk. They were in a drill, and I had to be in because we had an odd number of players. And so I'm in the drill passing the ball back and forth to my son, and they wanted people to talk. So I started talking, and just, you know, all of a sudden I said, when do the Broncos play on Sunday? And, you know, because Kyle was there. And, yeah. I said, and this and that. And then Kyle says, the Chiefs have the same percentage of chance to win the Super Bowl as the Broncos do right now. Well, that's untrue.
Yeah.
That's untrue. But people on the outside, the naysayers, and even some people within Chiefs Kingdom will say, listen, bad things always happen, and we'll find a way to lose. We'll line off sides. Somebody will do something dumb. Andy Reid's going to have horrible clock management, settle for field goals when he should go for on fourth and inches. Or our kicker's going to miss two field goals. Or the defense is going to be horrible against the run again since they haven't played anybody offensively. It's any good the last 6 weeks. You can hear all the naysayers and negativity, which I get it. I do. So why is this postseason going to be the same old Chiefs, and why do they have no chance of making the Super Bowl or winning at all just like the Broncos, even though they're not in the playoffs, as Kyle says? Well, I would say the defense is a fluke. Would be one reason. If they don't stop the run, they're not going to the Super Bowl. The other reason I would say they could be the same old Chiefs is I don't know if they can run the ball effectively. I'm not sold on that yet. And I do worry that you look at the teams remaining in the playoffs, they all can run the ball and play pretty good defense. I still have questions whether the Chiefs can run the ball against a good defense, and I have questions on whether the Chiefs can stop the run against a good offense. I'm sorry, but I've seen six games, and it is improved. Don't get me wrong. But they've also played as front runners in almost every one of those games.
Yeah.
What happens when the Chiefs get down, if they get down in the playoffs, to Houston 10-0? What if they get down 7-0, 10-0, 14-0 at Baltimore? What if they get down early to Tennessee, even though it's at Arrowhead? The Chiefs haven't had to come, let me think about it, they haven't had the rally in any of these games. They've been front runners. Now, they were behind the Chargers the last game. They trailed. But they weren't like they weren't two scores behind.
Yeah.
And you think back to early in the year, they had games where they were. And those games, typically they lost. And this offense is supposed to be good enough to come back and do great things. It's not as good as it was last year, but how could it be? The defense is better, but those are reasons why this is the same old Chiefs. The defense is improved, but it's not there yet. The running game is okay, but it's got to be... If it's okay against average defenses, what's it going to be against better defenses? Now, Houston's defense isn't all that great, but Baltimore's is pretty good. Tennessee's is pretty good. And you go against the Super Bowl against the Niners or the Seahawks, you know, those are good defenses.
Oh, yeah.
So, or even the Packers is pretty good defense. So, those would be some of the reasons I'd say it's the same old Chiefs if those things happen. What about you?
The only thing that I would really add to that would be, you know, Andy Reid mismanaging the clock or doing something. Andy Reid's still the coach,
being
is what
conservative,
I would say. You know,
being conservative, like I said, fourth and inches not going for
it. It'd be something like that that I would add to that. But, yeah, for me, it's the defense can't stop the run would be why it'll be the same. And these are just obviously, you know, conjecture and predictions.
Right.
And, again, it's being conservative and, you know, and then it's always something fluky's going to happen, you know?
Well, Matthew Derrick said it yesterday, and we'll hear from him in a moment, Chiefs Digest, and he pointed out, you know, Chiefs are 9.5-point favorites, and I talked about aggressiveness. I said, can a coach win or lose a playoff game by the way he calls the game in regards to how aggressive or conservative he is? Bill O'Brien is usually pretty conservative. He was conservative at the end of the Bills game, and it cost him and went in overtime. But he was aggressive and went for it on a fourth down and five to close out the game against the Chiefs back in Arrowhead when they had the ball for 40 minutes. We've seen Andy Reid be aggressive in situations, but then other times you're like, why isn't he going for it? It's fourth and four, and our defense couldn't stop anybody early this year. We went through three instances of three games where Andy Reid did the same exact thing. Like, will he learn from his mistake? And the answer was no, no, and no.
Yeah.
But Matthew Derrick pointed out that when you're the underdog, and the Texans are a 9.5-point dog in this game, believe it or not, coming up on Sunday, that when you're the underdog, you're more likely to be more aggressive and take more chances. Mm-hmm. And when you're the favorite, you tend to be a little bit more to the vest. That concerns me. Because the Chiefs are the favorite. Andy Reid could be close to the vest. Do you trust Patrick Mahomes on a fourth and two at the, let's say the defense has been playing good enough, and we get to the fourth quarter on Sunday against the Texans, and the Chiefs are up 24 to 20. Is Andy Reid going to go for it on fourth and two at the Houston 38, or is he going to pooch punt it?
At 24-20, if the defense has been playing good, he's going to pooch punt it.
He's going to pooch punt it.
Yeah, I mean, I want him to go for it, too.
I would go for it, and you have a chance to put Houston's out of timeouts, fourth and two, but they have 2 minute warrant. Let's say about a minute 55, whatever, to go length of the field. The conservative approach is what?
Punt.
Now, if it's 24-21, you should be going for it. But the flip side of that is, if you don't get it, then they only have to go 20, 30 yards to get field goal range. Yeah. But the other flip side is, if you get it, you end the game. Whereas if you punt it, they still have plenty of time to get a field goal and get field goal range to tie the game. I think it's a big difference between being up 3 or 4. I do think that the strategy could be a little bit different. 24-20.
Do you think Andy Reid changes his mind in that situation? I know we do.
I don't know.
That's the thing for me.
I'm scared of a game that happens like that, whether it's a Texan game or if the Chiefs go to Baltimore or Tennessee at home or the Super Bowl, where the Chiefs have a chance with their offense to close the game, to finish and slam the door, whether it's 4th and 1, 4th and 2 at the opposing team's 40.
Yeah.
And whether they're up 3 or 4 or 6 or whatever it may be, or even 7, which 7, most people would say you just punt it and take your chances because they still get overtime.
Hold them to a field goal, too, instead of a touchdown happens there.
But I think this year, more so than others, I think Andy Reid's going to do what you just said. I think he's going to be more conservative than he's ever been because he now believes in the defense.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Right. It's like, even if they haven't 100% earned that trust from everybody, the way they played the last 6 weeks.
Right. I believe Andy, the thing that'll go through his mind is, okay, it's 4th and 2. I'm going to go for it. Well, now, you know what? If I go for it here, that means I don't trust my defense, and I do trust my defense. And he'd be worried about what people think. It's like, forget it. Go for the kill, man. That's the thing that worries me about Andy Reid is there's times where he's aggressive and goes for it. There's other times where he's very conservative. And you can play the percentages all you want. He might look at the Texan game and go, see, you know, they shouldn't have gone for it on a 4th and 1 with a sneak.
Yeah.
Now, I would argue they just had the wrong play call. But, you know, Andy Reid's supposed to be this genius play caller. He doesn't have one play in his playbook that can get you 1 yard. That's fine. I find that amazing to me. That's amazing to me. So I want the offense. I still think that's the best unit they have.
Oh, yeah.
And I've got a quarterback that's MVP and one of the best quarterbacks in the world. Why wouldn't I let him have the chance to have multiple options on an RPO, but he's got not Blake Bell as my option. I've got multiple options, or he can run it. And in a 4th and 2 in the playoffs, Mahomes, remember the Tennessee game? He didn't run for it because, well, he was hobbled with the knee brace.
Yeah.
Two, he didn't think he could get there. So he took a loss, but he didn't want to throw the ball out of bounds because then that would have stopped the clock, okay? And then, of course, they had the whole problem with the field goal snap and everything else. But if that's a playoff game, which this is what it'll be Sunday, Patrick Mahomes is going to lower his head and get the first down, I think.
On that play, for sure, yeah.
Yes.
On that 3rd down and short play, he's going to do that for sure.
3rd and short, yeah, that's right, because they end up losing yards and then they get it for the field goal. So it'd be interesting.
But even on a 4th down and short, he'll lower his shoulder.
He better.
And he'll try to get it. He's not, you know, I don't think.
He's a competitor.
He said that in the preseason auto play. You know, he's like, if it's during the season, it should be that way.
Should that be a concern? Is that Mahomes is going to be just, you know, all out Sunday, and then he runs for 15 yards, and he's trying to make a play in the second quarter, and then gets concussed?
Yeah.
I mean, now you got to bring in Matt Moore.
That's fluky stuff.
I know. That scares me. The Chiefs are one hit away from being all of a sudden, we have no chance, and that's Mahomes getting hurt.
Yeah.
Matthew Derrick of Chiefs Digest, our guest yesterday, if you missed the whole interview, it's posted at our podcast, The Sports Ticket, on KDCountry94.com. And he says, you know, everybody talks about how the Chiefs are different from Week 6 when they lost to the Texans 31-24. Chiefs are missing a lot of key players. Sammy Watkins, Eric Fisher, Chris Jones, Anthony Hitchens was out with an injury. They got all those guys back. But J.J. Watt didn't play in that first game either.
They have been Jekyll and Hyde, and I think a big part of it has been, you know, defensively, you know, they didn't have J.J. Watt most of the season, and that's their game breaker. I mean, that's the guy that they need, and so they've overcome that. I mean, they have an 11-5 record when you don't have Watt most of the campaign. It's a pretty big deal. But I think just right now, I think it's a question of just, you know, how much do they have him? I mean, he looked pretty good. I think played a little bit more than I expected in the wild card game. But, you know, if we'll see how he's able to bounce back. You know, after getting the first action in a while, sometimes that means the second game's a little bit tougher. I think a big part of what, you know, the Texans are going to do defensively is going to depend on him.
That will be interesting with J.J. Watt back in the mix. Houston is a better team defensively, no question about it. All right, so I'm hoping I picked the Chiefs to make the Super Bowl before the year began. And I remember we talked on the show. The Chiefs defense is just marginally improved, and the offense regresses just a little bit. The Chiefs defense becomes a top 15, maybe just a top 20 defense. This team's going to win the Super Bowl. Well, their defense is actually in the top 10 in regards to scoring defense, which to me is what you should be judged on mostly. And they're in the top three the last 6 weeks. So unless something freaky happens, and please, football gods, don't ruin this for us. We're going to play this song until people are sick of hearing it. Until the Chiefs win a Super Bowl.
Foremost champions, West Division. Playoffs bound and father of four rivers. Tom is old now, older than the trees, bigger than the mountains, taller than Drew Brees. Pat Mahomes, take me home. It could go all the way, all the way. Pat Mahomes, take me home to the place we belong. Kansas City to Miami, take me home, Pat Mahomes.
Please, please, Patrick, take us to Miami, but not as spectators. As a participant in a Super Bowl.
No spectating.
Now, think about this for a second. If you believe in karma, Dusty mentioned it earlier. Isn't karma got to go our way at some point, right? You believe in karma? Who did the Royals have to beat in order to get to the playoffs and the World Series, not the playoffs, in 14 and 15. See, but this is flawed now that I think about it.
I saw that.
It wasn't the same year. It wasn't the same year. They beat Baltimore in the ALCS.
It was the same round. Or no, it wasn't even the same round.
It wasn't the same round. It was 14 was ALCS, and then the 15 was ALDS against Houston. But they had to beat Houston and Baltimore in order to make it to the World Series in one way or another both years.
Yeah.
Eric Fisher, interesting stat. If you remember the Texan game, Eric Fisher got beat on that last play before halftime, and it was a strip sack and fumble when Andy Reid decided to be aggressive, which I'm glad, and I hope he does the same thing again, which I'm guessing he won't. Eric Fisher's back. Do you know what the Chiefs' record is when Eric Fisher plays this year? Do you know how many times they've lost with Eric Fisher?
One.
Zero. The Chiefs are 8-0 with Eric Fisher.
Well, they lost that game.
What's that?
That you're just mentioning where he... The strip sack was against the Texans.
Eric Fisher didn't play against
the Texans. Oh, he didn't play. I thought Irving, you said he was back in that game.
Irving allowed the strip sack in place of Fisher.
Yeah.
The Chiefs are 8-0. According to Matthew Derrick, the Chiefs are 8-0 with Eric Fisher plays this year. Yeah. Starts. They're 4-4 in the other games. He's ready to go.
Yeah. Well, and you knew that. You can't have Cam Irving out there.
No.
And that anybody that is a starter as long as he's been, whether he's outstanding or not, is going to help better than Cam Irving.
8-0. That's pretty important. He's a lot more important than people may realize at left tackle.
Yeah.
And then they'll have everybody healthy. Morris Claiborne looks like he'll be. He can be a reserve DB. Basically, the only big injury they got is Thornhill's out with the torn ACL.
Yeah.
Everybody else looks like he's ready. Xavier Williams is into the defensive rotation. He was on IR earlier in the year. They brought him back. The Chiefs are about as healthy as they could be going into this game on Sunday, except for Thornhill being out. Although Kelsey was limited in practice today with a knee. That's a little bit concerning.
Yeah.
We shall see. Don't know if Will Fuller's going to play for the Texans. He's got a groin. That could easily flare up right away. So it's something to watch with Kelsey. That changes the Chiefs' offense if Kelsey can't really go very well. So let's hope that's not, a jinx. And then Tyrann Mathieu, who did he play for last year?
The Texans.
I think Tyrann Mathieu is going to have that defense ready to go. The more and more I get ready for this game, the more and more I think the Chiefs are going to just hit him in the nose right off the bat Sunday. They're going to go right down the field and score. They're going to get a 3-and-out. They're going to go right down the field and score. And this game might not even be that close. I'm hoping.
I hope you're right.
All of a sudden, I just start to get feeling better. The longer this week goes, I'm starting to feel better and better about it. And that scares the you-know-what out of me.
Oh, yeah.
That scares me. All right, the NBA. Who do you think is the best player in the NBA right now? Well, two of the best young players in the NBA squared off last night, the Denver Nuggets and the Dallas Mavericks, and one of them hit the game winner.
He starts backing down Finney Smith, picks up his dribble, throws it out, it gets deflected. Jamal Murray runs it back down. Still plenty of time, back over to Joker at the elbow. Now 10 left to go in the game. Joker's in the low block, spins, leans in, got it! A possible game winner for Nikola Jokic! Puts the Nuggets up by one with 7.9 seconds to go. Now Denver just needs one stop.
Nikola Jokic is really good. If you haven't seen him play, he can post, he can shoot the three. He had 26 of 33 in the second half. He is a really good young player. Second round draft pick. Goes to show you it's a crapshoot in the NBA even. And he hit the game winner with 7.9 to go. They beat the Mavericks, who of course have Luka Doncic, who had 27 points, 10 assists, and 9 rebounds, one rebound short of his 12th triple-double of the year. He's certainly one of those up-and-coming great players. He's one of my favorite players to watch right now. And I've seen some really cool things he does off the court and then before the games as well. Seems like he'd be a stand-up guy. And the Nuggets are the number 2 seed right now in the West. They have the second-best Western record in the Western Conference behind the Lakers. They're 26-11. Lakers are 30-7. So, who is the best player in the NBA right now? I'm going to give you some names, and you tell me who you think's the best NBA player right now. Okay?
Okay.
And if I miss somebody, you let me know. We'll throw them out there. Okay, so obviously LeBron is having a really good year. Greek the Freak, Giannis in Milwaukee, MVP last year. Kawhi Leonard, when he plays, the load management. James Harden, who's averaging, 38 points a game. Damian Lillard, who's really fun to watch for Portland. Luka Doncic, who I love, who's 20 years old. He can't even drink legally. But I bet he has.
I bet he can probably where he's from.
Well, yeah, that's true. Nikola Jokic of the Nuggets, who hit the game winner last night, who had 47 the other night. Paul George. Anthony Davis. I throw Steph Curry out there, even though he's hurt right now. Russell Westbrook. Joel Embiid. And now I'm going to give you some guys that maybe are maybe better than we give him credit for. Jimmy Butler, the Heat are having a great year.
Uh-huh.
And boy, you see Jimmy last night fired up after his altercation. Yeah. Ja Morant is really fun to watch. Yeah. Point guard for the Grizzlies.
He wasn't fun to watch in the tournament last year.
Man.
When he beat K-State.
he's good. Kemba Walker, Celtics having a great year. He's still a really good player. Kyrie Irving's been hurt most of the year, but he's still a really good player, although I would argue the teams get worse when he's on their team. Except when he had LeBron in Cleveland. And I don't include Klay Thompson or Kevin Durant because they're hurting out for the season. Anybody I miss? Devontae Graham's having a great year for the Hornets, but I wouldn't say, I'm sitting here trying to figure out who the top 10 players in the league are. I think I've got them in this list unless I'm overseeing somebody.
I didn't hear anybody or think of anybody while you were saying those.
So of that list, who do you think is the best NBA? Who is the best player in the NBA right now? Who do you think is the best player in the NBA right now? Now, if you had to pick,
if I, if you had, for me, it's Giannis.
Okay.
I just all around everything he does.
Okay.
It's Giannis for me, and he's what would I say 1A, and I would say right now, mm-hmm. I would put Doncic number two right now. To be completely just everything he does.
Yeah.
Now James Harden, if you ask me who the best scorer is in the NBA, sure, it's James obviously. Harden. I mean, that's not hard to figure out. But.
Now see, I'll disagree with you. I think the two best players in the NBA, is LeBron. I think people are just tired of mentioning LeBron. Yeah. LeBron's having an unbelievable year again. LeBron and Kawhi, to me, are the two best players in the NBA. And I've thought that now for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And why is because I think they're so complete. To me, they're still today, I think they're the two best players in the league. Now, statistically, if you look at the numbers, you would probably say Giannis would be there, Harden for offense, and then Doncic with all his numbers. But LeBron's had lots of triple-doubles or near-triple-doubles sure. and doing what he always does. And people just get bored by that, and they just totally kick LeBron to the side because he had one bad year, which, by the way, his one bad year last year wasn't that bad. It's yeah. just that he had a bad team around him for once in his life. And people kind of overlook LeBron, which is hard to believe because he might be the greatest player of all time. Jokic is a guy that I think you got to watch out in the future. Paul George is a great two-way player. Complete player. Anthony Davis is really, really good, too. We don't give him a lot of credit, and we probably should. But I think, for me, it's LeBron and Kawhi. When they're both healthy, they're the two best and most complete players and can carry their team to victories and makes their teammates better. But I do, even though I love Luka Doncic, so I have a crush on him, apparently. Luka, he's only 20. He's going to be the best player in the NBA, I think. But you're right. I think he's right there in the top five already. And you look at his numbers, and he's only
what he's doing right now.
He's only going to get better.
Insane.
He's only going to get better, and he's doing it against good teams. He did it against the Lakers. Although the last time the Lakers, he struggled, but the first time he lit him up, and he schooled LeBron a couple times with some pullback deep threes. But there's no doubt. I think the face of the league in the future is going to be Luka Doncic, and I think Jokic is one of those guys as well. And Trae Young could be the future of this league. Ja Morant, I think, is the future of this league. Honestly, I would say Luka Doncic and Ja Morant might be the guys leading this league for the next 10 to 15 years, and they'll be the superstars, and they're maybe already there, and they'll be the best players in the NBA. And then Giannis is still young, too, by the way. I shouldn't leave him out. But for me, it's LeBron and Kawhi are the best right now, but I'm with you. Giannis is right there, and it is really splitting hairs when you really think about it.
It is.
I can't put Harden as the best player because he's just not a complete player. No. But he is the best scorer, and honestly, it's not even that close. He is the best scorer.
Oh, yeah. He's probably 7-8 points ahead of whoever's second in scoring right now. I don't know if it's Giannis or not.
If you could pick any player in the NBA to build your team around right now, you have the number one pick, and you pick anybody to build your team right now. Obviously, it won't be LeBron. He's too old. Who would you take? I'd take Doncic.
Him
or Morant would be my two. Interesting. There's some good players on that list. Really, really good players. The Bucks have the best record in the NBA, 33-6. And Giannis is having a great year.
Yeah.
Starting to be able to shoot that ball a little better from the perimeter. I do think there's been a few big games I've seen him play where he has disappeared a little bit, which I think maybe just takes some time for it to develop. So he's fun to watch. That's for sure. He's a freak. That's why he's called Greek the Freak.
Yeah.
Because nobody can announce his last name. That's why he's called Greek the Freak.
Yeah.
Giannis. Dusty thinks he's the best player in the NBA. Can't disagree. And if I say LeBron or Kawhi, I think a lot of people say can't necessarily disagree. We're splitting hairs.
Yeah, so this is like my only thing on Kawhi is like get him out there and play.
Right,
you know?
Right. That holds you back.
If he's the best player in the NBA, he should be playing.
Yeah, I agree. But, you know, you look at last year, it was smart what they did.
Yeah.
Because had they not rested him, I don't think the Raptors win that last year. That was really, really smart. And, by the way, if you wonder about LeBron and his numbers this year, LeBron James is averaging 25 points, 11 assists and 8 rebounds. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.